Check. Okay.
This is the Barbershop Show, live from Carter's Barbershop, 3622 West Surmac, in Chicago's North Lawndale neighborhood, with your host, WBEZ's Richard Steele.
This is the Barbershop Show. I'm Richard Steele. Today, we're revisiting my 2005 conversation with Sam Chatman. Sam has been involved in Chicago's stepper scene since the very beginning. But first, we talk about just what stepping is. When Chicago DJ Sam Chatman and his high school friend, Bill Freeman, were spinning dance tunes at Barbara's Peppermint Lounge, they could not have known that their weekend parties would be the beginning of a Chicago dance style called steppin'. Firmly rooted in bop, steppin' is a smoother, more elegant form of dance that resembles profiling and modeling your individual style simultaneously. I had the pleasure of hosting one of the first big prize money steppers contests back in the day, and it was then and there that I saw my old friend, club DJ Sam Chatman, at his best. Not too long ago, I had a rare opportunity to sit down and reminisce with Sam about days gone by. While a younger generation has put its mark on the moves, there are some aspects that have not changed.
People can dress up, go out, look good. I have an expression that I use for steppers. You come to the party looking good and smelling good, and you leave that way. Even though now a lot of people perspire, it's the dressing up, it's the clothes, it's the color. And 99% of every female stepper on a dance floor have on heels. And fellas, we like heels.
How far back do you go?
I go back to the beginning of stepping. Herb Kent always tell people that the first time he ever saw the word stepping or steppers party on a flyer, it was mine. And there's been people who have credited me with the coin in the phrase stepping.
So what year would that be? What are we talking about?
I'm talking, and I'm not a year guy because I don't even remember what year I was born, so naturally I don't remember how old I am.
Right.
But anyway, I'm guessing, Richard, I would say 64, 65, 66 in that area that we start using phrases like stepping.
Uh-huh. So let's talk about how it developed from the bopping concept of the 50s.
Young people watching their moms and dad at, you know, house parties or bopping, and they put a little twist on it. They start better footwork, more turns and spins, and actually when you would watch them dance on the dance floor, they actually looked like they were walking down the street or just stepping up some stairs. So there the phrase was coined.
If you're just joining us, this is the Barbershop Show, brought to you by Vocalo.org. We're revisiting my conversation with Chicago stepper DJ and historian Sam Chatman.
And, you know, if I saw, let's say you, Richard, I saw you on the dance floor and you pull a real bad move, I'm going to go home,
now,
practice that move.
Bad as in good.
Bad as in good.
Okay.
I'm going to go home and work on that move and take it to another level. As a DJ, I used to listen to, say, you guys, and I'd hear, say, Butterball or Rodney Jones with a phrase. I'd take that and twist it and turn it into a Sam Chatman phrase. That's the way steppers are. They see a great move, then they'll put it and put their own spin on it and take it to another level. So no one could really say, I'm the guy who started this or I'm the guy who started that. It just happened.
But there are some people in Chicago, both on the South and West Side, in the African-American community, who were known as like some of the best at it and some of the ones who originated some moves and people you think of automatically.
Instantly. The winner of the first V103 World's Largest Steppers Contest was Dimples and Marzette.
I was there.
Okay,
I was working for the station.
And I was DJing. Dimples was an incredible female dancer. Marzette, who went on to record two or three big records and
sure,
is still
Marzette
recording,
Griffith, yeah.
Nothing But a Party, etc., was one of the top. Now, there's a tremendous difference in age. Age has nothing to do with the music or the dancers, etc. Then the people that came in second was Lil Alfred and Janice. Janice was like the queen of the young steppers. Dimples was the queen of the older steppers, and vice versa with Lil Alfred, even though his age and Marzette was similar. But anyway, make a long story short, they were just phenomenal. They had moves that no one else could follow. The concept of the World's Largest Steppers Contest was just a group of people competing. They were so phenomenal and acrobatic that they had to change the structure of the dance to come up with various categories, freestyle and originals and ages, something that I protested vehemently because I thought if you're competing, you're supposed to compete against everybody. But Lil Alfred and Marzette and Janice changed how they had to do this contest because they were just so great. They changed the whole flow.
Here we are once again, meeting in the club like we're just friends. Somehow I knew I'd see you again. I've been waiting half the night. Now it's time to get it right. They're about to hit us with the light. And I say to you, your eyes show me that you've got to groove. Your thighs tell me that you wanna move. And from the smell, your perfume, I can feel you getting closer to me from across the room. It's nothing but a party, and if it takes all night, it's nothing.
Every stepper, I know people who, Richard, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, who can't walk across the street without stumbling, who think they're the best dancers. And my job as a DJ was always, If you told me you were the best dancer, I would okay it. Yes, you are the best I've ever seen. In other words, every stepper, regardless how great they are, think they're the best in the world.
Now, was the same music as good for freestyle as it was freestyle with people doing acrobatics and flipping and all of that?
No.
The same as it was for the smooth concept
if
of
you
stepping.
Remember the first dance contest, and a lot of people protested that, but I didn't care because I was in charge. I played three records for that whole party, and these were three records that I would say that these were some of my personal favorites that I know that would work. It would give the acrobatic person freedom, and it would also give the smooth steppers. I played two smooth ones, and then the last record was up-tempo. It was Eddie Kendrick's record called Body Talk, where everybody could just get off.
Sam, one of the things I've heard you talk about was how rough it could be at some of the sets back in the old days. I heard you talk about some sets that you sponsored on the west side of Chicago, and the fact that no matter how rough the set was, even the gangsters wanted to step, and it created a situation where even as rough as they might be, they wanted to keep the steppers set without problems.
I'm talking about some of the big gang leaders.
Yeah,
big
sure.
gang leaders. Everybody in the city of Chicago probably have heard of Jeff Fort. You know, he was a Blackstone Nation, et cetera, et cetera. I never forget going to one of his parties. And when I got there,
you were the DJ.
I'm the DJ. All of these disciples were there. You know, and I said, man, I can't believe all these disciples are at Jeff Fort's party. And he told me, party is off. The gang banging is off limits. I had a police officer confront me once, and he asked me, how could I be in the den of all these gangsters? And how could I talk to them the way I do? Did I know some of these guys were killers? And I said, I can get away with it for one reason. They cannot be barred from Sam Chapman's party. I had the elite party in the city. And from 1974 to 1982, I had the only steppers party in this town. There was the disco era, And if you were, and these were young people, I had teenage steppers parties. Herb Kent stopped doing the high school parties. I took over. And I went 10, maybe 12 years. I did nothing but kids. And these were the best. These kids who were my steppers in 1974, 75, are the top steppers in the city of Chicago today.
How did you get involved in the first place? I mean, how did you start this whole thing?
The love of music. I started on the west side at Barber's Peppermint Lounge. Bill Freeman and I started, we graduated from high school together. We started DJing together at Barber's Peppermint Lounge. I know you're familiar with it.
Sure, absolutely.
I was at Barber's Peppermint Lounge the first day they opened, and it took me about 3 years now to get in there because I was unknown. Even though I had great house parties during high school, they didn't know me as a DJ. So I scuffled around, you know, all I did was listen to VON and practice at home, trying to get, you know, I wanted to get a break and, you know, and doing this. And it was just the love of the music. That's the only thing that I can tell you how I just love music.
There are people who thought that it would die out, especially in the 70s when the disco era came in. And there were a lot of dances that people did. And it didn't die out, but it didn't have the popularity it has now. But it made this amazing comeback in the 80s. And one of the things you talked about was the V103 World's Largest Steppers Contest that offered prizes of thousands of dollars. But how did all that happen? What do you think regenerated the interest in stepping and made it sort of blow up to what it is today? It's almost an industry in entertainment in Black Chicago.
It is definitely an industry. Most of the people that are, everybody in the city of Chicago who thinks he's a stepper is a stepper's instructor now. And these people are giving lessons all over the city of Chicago. All of the top steppers now were the disco craze people. You know, we used to call them preppies. You know, they would go to the hip-hop parties. You didn't go to a stepper's party back in the 70s because nothing was there but thugs. You know, I was the thugs DJ, so I'm not going to. I want to go. You know, now the beautiful ladies were there, but I'm a guy by myself. I don't have any homies. I don't go. They didn't know they could come there and be probably safer there than anywhere because gang banging was off limits at a stepper's party. So, but now these people, some of them went off to college. They got, you know, degrees. They got great jobs. They're bored stiff now. So what they're doing? They're taking steppers lessons. And so now, and their children, these great steppers from the 70s and 80s, their kids are stepping. I'm going into my third generation of steppers. You know, I got the grandmother saying, it's a shame, you know, they talk about my age. Old DJ, still DJing. My grandson is stepping with Sam Chapman. And that's the best thing they could ever say to me. For me to be able to communicate with people that's 20 and 30 years younger than me musically, that is what I love.
Our guest is Sam Chatman, concert promoter, club DJ, and one-time club owner whose name is synonymous with promoting great parties for dancers on Chicago's South and West sides. And he's also one of the most vigorous promoters of the dance craze in Chicago's African-American community called Steppin'. You just heard Mellow Mellow Right On by Laurel. Welcome back to the Barbershop Show. I'm Richard Steele. Join the conversation by tweeting us with the hashtag Barbershop Show. Today, we're revisiting my 2005 conversation with Chicago stepper DJ Sam Chatman. Sam, I want to talk about the music part of the package, and that is what makes a great stepper's record. What do you listen for? Because there are people who have listened to the music that you've programmed for a radio station, and I have been one of them who've come up to you and said, man, what was that played? And you said, I don't know, you know, because I have records that come out of album. They're album cuts that may not have been like big sellers, but they're perfect in terms of the rhythm of the record, the beat, that shuffle beat for steppers. So give me sort of a musical diagram of what you look for, what you're listening for.
When back in the day when people used to refer to me to Herb Kent would always say, "Oh, that B-side guy," you know, and I said that because when Herb decided to do Steppers, I'm the guy he called. And I think that's basically what it was. You know, there were big hits back in the day. Let's say you guys, when you guys were playing all of the great hits back in the day, let's say you were playing the Girls All Right With Me by the Temptations. Right. Well, on the other side of the Girl All Right With Me was, I'm just using an example, was Just My Imagination. That was my job, was to come up with the music that you didn't hear on the radio. And you asked me what constitutes a great Steppers, right? That has to be the most difficult thing that you could ask of me, for one reason, because there is no formula. It is strictly something that I hear. Let me give an example. I got classic Steppers record by Barbara Streisand, Celine Dion, Chris Isaac, who is country and western, Bette Midler, Smokey Robinson. I can just go on and never stop. I spend countless hours. Not now because I have a CD player in the car. But years ago I used to sit at home. I used to devote one or two days a week where I would sit at home. They would send me albums from all the record companies all over the country and just listen, looking for that one record, just one. If I found one a month, and it said that's what set me apart from all the DJs, music that nobody else had. That was good. People say, "Man, what was that?" And I wouldn't, and you know, and I, there was no CD recorders, and no, we couldn't duplicate them. So I tell them they couldn't find it, you know. And sometimes I would even tell them to write. I would make up a name and tell another DJ, so I would have exclusive rights to that particular cut.
Sam,
and I'm
you
still
did that.
Richard, and we still do that uh-huh. today.
But it's interesting you talk about different kinds of records from different artists. Could be a country artist, but there's that one record that can be used for stepping, and somebody says, "That who is that? That is who?" Mm-hmm. I can't believe it. There was a record that was a record from the, I think it was late 50s or early 60s by a white group called the Shondells.
Yeah.
Crystal Tommy Blue James. Persuasion.
Yes.
Tommy James and the Shondells. And it's one of the classic Steppers records.
That's right. And, you know, you mentioned classics. You know, and it's some people, you know, there are a lot of people who accuse me, you know, older people. When I say older people, say 50 plus of selling out. Those are, you know, and what I mean by saying, in other words, I'm not playing Tommy James and the Shondells or Jeffrey Love's Gonna Last, which, by the way, I coined the Steppers National Anthem back in 1979 or 1980, because there's so much new stuff with that flavor, like 50 Cent and Jay-Z. And at my age, I'm excited about it. In other words, we have to move on if we want this Steppers thing to live. We got to move into this new era. Ain't nothing wrong with slipping in Tommy James, and I do that. Ain't nothing wrong with slipping in Jeffrey, but I don't play eight or nine old classics in a row. I'll play one and surrounded by Beyonce and 50 Cent, et cetera, et cetera.
By the way, and these are records that have music tracks that lend themselves to Steppers
right.
dancing.
Right.
And I think Beyonce has one that
Beyonce just redid Wishing on a Star by Rose Royce.
Right.
Took it to another level. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
One of the favorite ones out there.
Oh, right one now. Of the top records is right.
Can anybody learn to step? Now let's get to this thing about learning how to step. How is it taught? Are we talking about counting steps, body movements, or what? Now you know some of the best teachers in Chicago.
Some of the best teachers in Chicago. My two top teachers is L.C. Henderson, and these are my personal instructors. I mentioned Andre Blackwell, Dre and Company. I mentioned that Andre Blackwell is currently teaching R. Kelly how to dance, and R. Kelly is dancing superbly. You have to have some kind of rhythm. A person with no rhythm, no. But you got to have some. You got to have some fundamentals of just dance, period. You got to have enough heart to want to get out there, first of all, because stepping is very, very intimidating. You don't want to get out there and look bad.
you gotta have
a feel for it, and you gotta in your heart you gotta know I can pick it up.
Yeah.
There are some people that teach count. Well, most of the instructors teach count.
Okay,
and some teach a five count or six count or whatever. I'm not a great dancer myself. I'm a great observer of dancers. So you know it depends on. The particular instructor.
No age limit. Age has nothing to do with it, right?
From birth to 1,000, you know, they step in Chicago and now worldwide, thanks to some of the great music that we have out there.
La 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 la. All night long, I'm gonna step all night long. I'm gonna keep stepping. I gotta keep stepping. Take your partner by the hand to the dance floor, and y'all start to dance. Now you can do it, fellas. Just kick out with your right and then with your left. Now cross over right, then cross over left. This dance is so smooth, but you don't wanna do it all by yourself. You keep stepping. Can you groove to this?
Stepping.
Everybody keep stepping. Can you step to this?
If you're just joining us, this is The Barbershop Show, brought to you by Vocalo.org. You can join the conversation tweeting with the hashtag Barbershop Show. Today, we're revisiting my 2005 conversation with Chicago stepper DJ Sam Chapman. You know, one of the interesting things about stepping, too, that I've observed over the years is are some of the old-timers, some of the traditions that went along with it that people would probably never be aware of, especially today, because I don't know if they do it as much anymore. But there are two things that always amaze me. It is how in a club where stepping is going on, if there is a mirror anywhere, people love to look at themselves.
The most vain
step. People
on earth.
That you know, is amazing.
Richard, you know, I got one friend of mine. He's a big guy, so he kind of perspire a lot. And he started patting. He doesn't wipe his face.
He pats
his face. And he started looking in the mirror, fixing his tie. I have a TV program that I do on Cable 19, and the biggest complaint that I had on my program is, why don't you make the guys take their hats off? Stepping with your hats on is a tradition. Hats match the outfit,
yeah,
the tie,
right, exactly,
or their
exactly.
socks, or their slacks. No, I'm not taking my hat off. Bishop Don Magic Juan and his guys came to a party with me, and they all big hat guys, Snoop Dogg. And everybody, and they're dancing, and one lady came up to me, and she wasn't aware, you know, of the tradition of
right,
stepping.
Right.
She said, sir, she said, it's such a great party, and everybody looks so elegant. She said, why don't you make these guys take their hats off? And I said, if I ask these guys to take their hats off, they'll walk out the door.
The party will be over, right?
Yeah, the party's over.
Did she accept that?
She didn't like it, but I told her it was a tradition, and when I use the word tradition, she sort of understood.
As a matter of fact, that we were talking about the first two World's Largest Steppers contests put on by the radio station. And one of the things they had was the preliminaries at mm-hmm. different clubs around Chicago. And one of the observations I made at a club called The Rose on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did the outfits match, but the guy had, he was one of the finalists too in the semifinals. He had, you know the thing about having the toothpick in mm-hmm. your mouth, right? He had a toothpick that was the same color as his outfit. You know, because you can get the party mm-hmm. stuff in stores about it. So he obviously went to the party store, got the toothpicks with the colors, and he had a toothpick in his mouth that was the same color as his outfit.
Believe me, there was no accident.
No, I know.
I mean, you know,
I understand that perfectly. Sure.
And you know, you mentioned the ladies. You know, there's some things that about stepping that are just natural. And being the type of man that I am, I could look at a lady's legs and tell one or two things, that she's a great stepper or she's a great stepper. Stepping ladies got great legs. Now, don't get me wrong now. I mean, you know, I don't care what size this lady is. And she accent those legs with those heels.
Yeah, the heels are
always heels and stockings.
Yeah, yeah.
And
always,
it's just
for steppers, yeah.
It just goes back to that tradition. You see a lady on the floor dancing and she got on flats. She just look out of place.
You know, that's true. I never thought about that, but you never see that at a stepper set, ever.
If she is, she's a rookie.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're learning and the process is going on, you need to have – ladies need to have heels on so they'll know how to do that.
I tell them, I said, don't go –
it's different.
Make sure you take your heels.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, and in this day and age, you know, with the where everybody wearing gym shoes or
– sure.
Or notice when you go to a stepper set – the guy's shoes are spit shine.
Always.
Oh, I mean, I'm doing a radio interview. My shoes are spit shine. And I'm going to go get my shoes shine. I'm going to make sure that they, you know, everything is straight.
Let me tell you one of the other observations I made over the years from back in the old days. People will find this really strange, but it isn't when you think about the reason for it. And these are people that used to have a little package that had some talcum powder to put on the floor so that when they danced, they'd be smooth. They'd slide across the floor.
Mm-hmm. And well, see, now we still do that.
I don't see it as much as I did back in the old days.
If you come to East of the Ryan on Friday night, all four corners of the dance floor, I got talcum powder.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
And the only reason I got talcum powder, I've ran out of dance wax.
Okay.
The dance wax is a little more slipperier. You know, a lot of people complain that, you know, they're afraid to fall, especially ladies in new shoes and men in new shoes. But I got talcum powder in all four corners of the dance floor. And when the dancers get ready to come out, they're walking and they're stepping the talcum powder. And these are the serious steppers who are doing this. They slide a lot, you know, and glide a lot.
That's part of it.
That's part of the routine.
I want to talk about the range of things connected to stepping. We mentioned some of them, but this has really become an industry. It's everything from websites to contests worth thousands of dollars in prize money to people who teach. I mean, you can go by, there's some storefronts that have, the business that they have is teaching people how to step. I mean, there's a couple of other things they do, but the primary thing is teaching people how to step. That is amazing.
That is amazing. And like I say,
there are items that people have, you know,
right.
Clothes. Yeah. There are, I saw a guy one night at a club, and the club I do a thing on Friday night, Taste Entertainment Center, and he was passing out cards because the hat he had on was really kind of tilted and leaning to the side. Looking, but he was passing out some cards, and he has a store that sells hats. But on that card, he also talked about, you know, hats, but clothing for steppers.
Excuse me, now the shirt, I got on a shirt now, but the shirt made out of the same material, and the back of it has Chicago steppers. I got steppers T-shirts. I got steppers hats. I got steppers and the blouses for the ladies. A little, you know, little cute tie around bra. They got with Chicago steppers on them. And the guy who you're talking about, his name is Bernard. That's all Bernard does. Now he has a hat store now. He just recently got this hat store in the last couple of years. But that's all he's done in the last 10 years was sell steppers apparel. That's all he does. T-shirts, towels, caps, everything. Nothing but, apparel for steppers. And he's made a living out of it.
Now, here's a question that I have for you, though. How do you, and then this came up, too, with the R. Kelly. We mentioned R. Kelly has a record that is directly connected to stepping.
Well, there's two now.
There are two records, mm-hmm. Right.
Happy People and Stepping in the Name of Love.
Stepping in the Name of Love.
His CD has one, he has a double CD that's coming out. One side is absolutely nothing but stepping, and the other side is inspirational.
Well, one of the questions I had, somebody I heard in a conversation discussing this, was that when he released Stepping in the Name of Love, and when you look at the video of that record on TV, people in other parts of the country who've seen that confuse what is done here in Chicago with the Greek step process that black fraternities do mm-hmm. in college. And it's a totally different
totally
thing.
Different
one thing has nothing to do with the other.
Nope, not even, no similarity.
But on college campuses you hear
step shows. Yes.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And it's a totally different
Different ball game.
So any confusion there? Between
no, because real steppers know. Now only confusion, only way that could
But when
be
you're a, taking it outside of Chicago.
Yeah, now that could be a problem, people that don't know. And when people, you know, you're talking about the popularity of stepping. When people see that R. Kelly video, you know, and very important, Richard, that I touch on some of what we call the mainstream steppers in the city of Chicago didn't like the R. Kelly video because they didn't see enough older people in it. You know, and the R. Kelly has some things in his in that video, step, step, dip, steppers, don't do that.
You know, right, exactly.
You know, but it didn't matter to me.
Those were like the wrong instructions.
Right. In a sense, it was. But now they could do that, you know, but it didn't bother me simply because it was taking stepping to another level. And I, you know, and R. Kelly is a very good friend of mine. And I didn't mind that as a quote unquote mainstreamer. But I emphasize to people as I travel around the country that Chicago steppers, real steppers, don't do that. A lot of the older steppers got upset with some of those guys. 90% of those people that was in that video are World's Largest Steppers Contest winners. And a lot of guys, you know, back to the old word, selling out, a lot of steppers got angry with them because they figured they were supposed to tell R. Kelly, look, we don't do this. But I can't tell Smokey Robinson not to say ooh, baby, baby in his record if this is the way Smokey wrote it. This is the way R. Kelly wrote it. So we have to sometimes conform a little bit, you know, to some certain things.
Has it helped on a national basis?
Unbelievable.
I know one thing's for sure. I'm going to put on my dancing shoes. Then I'm going to hit the door and go out and step the whole night through.
Step in the name of love.
Our guest is Sam Chatman, concert promoter, club DJ, and one-time club owner whose name is synonymous with promoting great parties for dancers on Chicago's South and West Sides. And he's also one of the most vigorous promoters of the dance craze in Chicago's African-American community called Steppin'. Coming up after the break, we'll get an update on the lack of full-line grocery stores in Chicago's South Shore neighborhood. We'll be right back.
Listen, love, to the song I'm singing. Hopefully, you have heard my every word. But you see, my heart must remind me. For it's so in love with you.
Cosa?
Listen, love, to the song I'm singing. Hopefully, you have heard my every word. But you see, my heart must remind me, for it's so in love with you.
And just heard Listen, Love by John Lucien. Met him years ago. He passed away. Great guy. Wonderful vocalist. Welcome back to the Barbershop Show, produced by Vocalo 91.1 FM. My name is Richard Steele. We're here at Carter's Barbershop in Chicago's North Lawndale neighborhood, just about every Friday at noon. In Chloe Hadavis's recent article for the Southside Weekly titled What Happened to Mariano's, she states that there have been concerted and successful efforts to improve food access on the south side of Chicago through new full-service grocery stores. We spoke with Chloe at length about ongoing attempts to bring a grocery store in to serve the South Shore and South Chicago communities. We also spoke to artist Nicole Bond, a South Shore native who recently returned to the neighborhood, only to find that it's a different place than the one she grew up in.
I just wonder, are we really going to say what we're not going to say, or are we just not going to say what we're not going to say for the whole time? The neighborhood is what it is. It's a predominantly black neighborhood. It is a predominantly lower-level income neighborhood. It didn't used to be when I was there in the late 70s. If you were living in South Shore, you were doing something kind of nice for yourself. Now it's different.
Though South Shore has been without a full-line grocery store since the closure of Dominick's in 2013, there are people who've been working at the grassroots level to provide healthy food access for the community. 7 years ago, Dr. Jafunza Wright and her husband Fred Carter launched the Healthy Food Hub. The project offers healthier, affordable eating through collective buying power. And they're here with us now along with their son. So welcome to Dr. Jafunza Wright, Fred Carter, and Akeen Carter. Welcome to everybody. How y'all doing?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you for having me.
Look like you're eating healthy. And, you know, yeah. I look like I just ate a sweet roll, you know, so it's unfortunate. So let me ask you a question to both you, doctor, and your husband. How did you both develop this sort of personal interest in the healthy food concept, and especially as it relates to fruits and vegetables, sort of as a lifestyle, and also the desire to sort of pass that on to the community? How did all that start?
Ladies first, or men?
This is a free-flowing conversation, so yeah. Okay. So,
well, I'll take it.
Doctor, you can talk.
Basically,
to us.
It came out of my practice. I'm a holistic family physician who uses food as medicine. And so what I began to experience was that people were having a difficult time getting access to the foods that I was asking them to get and at a quality that was needed. And so literally the Healthy Food Hub was born out of my practice. I mean, literally I would have local food by the reception, area, some okra, some greens.
So here's a reminder, folks, right?
Yeah. So, and then we also had dried goods like a wide variety of whole grains and beans. So I was able to teach as well as have those things available. And when Trinity United Church across, Trinity United Church of Christ, ask us to partner with them around bringing a farmer's market to the church, we were able to take the concept that was in my practice and take it out into the community.
So how about you, Fred? Is this just by association in terms of your wife? And so
that was a part of it, but what started the backroom drive for the whole thing, we went to a meeting once in 2003 in Yellow Springs, Ohio. It was with the Community Solution. They talked about climate resource depletion, and that started our whole family on a journey of sustainability. And one of the problems that we were going to face that was discussed in the room was at Antioch College, and they was talking about the impact food and energy was going to have and what community that was going to be more severely impacted. And of course the community that was going to be most harmed was the one that we lived in. And so they were talked about food systems, challenges around growing food, people not being able to eat. So we really only like 9 meals away from collapse. And so that started this whole thing about creating a local food-based system that could support community and being more resilient as things unwind in terms of not being able to get food from greater distance, which is happening. So the Healthy Food Hub was this model that we conceived by the integration of medical practice and my background in supply chain management and the growing of the food. We knew that from what we got and learned about the impact of the future is that we're going to have a different way of eating. It will be more local source. It should be more not centralized like we currently have now, a centralized purchasing process, a commodity process of buying food. It's going to be more community-based. That's the ancient resilient model that we've had throughout history.
So that was the basis of this idea about the Healthy Food Hub. Let me bring your son in here. Right. And this is Akeem Carter. Your involvement in this is, obviously your parents are...
Not too much of a choice at first.
You know, but I mean, so tell me about your involvement and from your understanding of it from a farming standpoint.
My main understanding is just the power and the healing effect of food, spiritually, physically, and economically. Ever since I was a child, I've always been in the garden with my mother, you know, spending time growing plants. And I haven't really been seriously farming for maybe about like 6 years now. And what's been really surreal for me is this disparity. You know, whenever I'm hanging around my friends and I'm, out on the South Side, and I'm out in Inglewood, you know, and I'm seeing this community that is just economically ravished. I'm looking at all these people, you know, my family and my friends around me who are struggling so much. And I am looking at the economic opportunities of food. You know, this is a multi-million-dollar business, you know, affair that has been come privatized, and it's something we really don't have a whole lot of control over. So a beautiful and a personal story for me is I lost one of my very close friends this year, Ryan. He passed away. He used to sell. And one of the things that became
to from, sell vegetables.
And no. Not sell vegetables. No. He actually used to sell dope. I mean, okay, he was a hustler. Yeah.
Right. So he was out there.
Okay. Yeah. So he was out there
in the life, right?
And living a life, living a fast life. And I had finally convinced him earlier this year to finally stop, and to come down to school with me. I was in Alabama at Alabama A&M, and finish up school with me. And when he passed, I realized, If I had developed this local food system to the point where I can hire, young boys like Ryan and young men my age who are in economic strife to the point where they have to resort to this, I could prevent lives from being taken, and I could help improve the community around me. And, I mean, it's just an economic plus. I mean, just to have local people, circulating the dollars in the community instead of it going to private hands, so... That's the most important aspect for me, at least.
Let me ask you this, Doctor. How does it work? And Fred, there are members like with a food co-op. How does the food hub work? Just the mechanics of it. What happens?
There's a membership fee for $25, but if you don't have the $25, what people have done, come in and volunteer.
What does the membership fee get you?
What it gets you is a discount in the food that we purchase or grow, and also it allows you to access some of the other programs inside of Black Oaks, educational programs at a discount rate. We teach sustainability. I'm a certified permaculturist. We teach class in gardening, agriculture, energy, we have four educational tracks. One is agriculture, which is what we're talking about now. The other one is sustainable energy. The other one is natural building. And the crown of it all is what we call resiliency. So these are programs...
Wait, don't go past that one. If that's the crown, you've got to explain what the resiliency aspect of it is.
The resiliency component of our commitment is the managing of our head while we go through this great transition, right? So we all are being challenged.
In a sense, what you're saying is how we think about this?
How we think about it.
Okay.
How we respond to it. We're not going to change what's happening in the now. But the thing that we can do is learn how to change our response to it. So one of the things that came out of our first encounter with the whole paradigm of sustainability is that people were being breakdown about it. Folks would be fighting about resources. I'm losing my home because of what's going on. How would I psychologically manage myself in a way that I'm resilient or still empowered by these transformational changes that are happening to all of us as human beings, that we can be effectively manage the trends? So learning how to do that is something that we feel we need to know more about. It would learn how to a lot of the problems in the community on a grassroots level is coming from the paradigm of resource constraint.
One of the things I think people, you have a location, right?
Yes. It's 2423 East 75th Street, one block east of Yates, right on 75th Street, 75th and Phillip.
Okay, this is a...
The Quarry Event Center.
Okay.
Yes.
I've been on Saturday morning, right. And quite a few people show up and get fresh fruits and vegetables.
Right.
It's a connection with... there's a farmer's market, actually,
yes.
And a connection with black farmers,
right.
Who I believe are in the black community of...
Where we live.
Oh, you live in...
We live 60 miles south of Chicago.
In Pembroke.
You live in Pembroke, Township, okay.
Yes.
On a 40-acre site.
Wow. So, I mean, there's been farming there for a number of years. A lot of things come out of Pembroke. There's Black Rodeo.
Yes.
Black Rodeo.
Yep.
I interviewed the gentleman who started that many years ago. Mm-hmm. There's also there are a lot of different activities in that area that have to do with what your thing is.
Right.
So on Saturday morning, I've seen, I mean, people come in and actually, they do a lot of shopping in terms of getting these fresh fruits and vegetables, right. and seem pretty happy about it to come in and do that. So that's been pretty successful.
That's us. Yeah, that's us. We call it a market day. I want to distinguish because one of the opportunities is that we can begin to heal ourselves as a community. So a lot of course, what's happened in our community is a result of us not having an immune system, a strong immune system in our community. And what makes that immune system are relationships. And so being able to build and strengthen those relationships, restore this sense of taking care of one another, is a very important step. And so we actually call ourselves a market day on that day when folks come and get their pre-orders and pick them up, and basically whatever it is that's left over, the overage makes the market. So that's the structure that came out of my practice and still is working to this day. And we call ourselves a market day because we're fashioned after an ancient indigenous concept where literally market day was the time when everyone in the community came out and shared and were together.
I bought some, I was there one time and I came through, I was there for something else and I came through and saw that and I bought some, what do you call those little tangerines?
The cuties.
The cuties. I bought a bunch of those, you know, and they were absolutely delicious. So.
Yeah. And that's another concept. We're small scale. Like, for instance, the elders can come in and buy 10 of those. And it's cheaper than buying the whole bag, and it's too much for them to buy the whole bag if they live alone.
I guess I am an elder.
No, I
thank you so much
like
for that.
Yeah. But we are servicing a lot more seniors now, and that's been good.
And that's good because in the South Shore area, there are a number of senior citizens. Right. If you're just joining us, this is the Barbershop Show produced by Vocalo 91.1 FM. Right now, we're talking to Dr. Jafunza Wright and her husband Fred and Akeem, their son, about the whole concept of a healthy food hub and the buying aspect of it and the remaining healthy. Let me ask you a question. And I'm guessing that this is somebody you knew or knew of very well, and I'm talking about Alvenia Fulton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she made a mark in terms of healthy eating for many, many years.
Yeah, I'm proud to say that I took care of her before she really took a deep turn.
Okay.
Yeah, we were actually making quite a bit of progress when I was caring for her before she died.
So in terms of getting the message out about the value of, maintaining one's health through healthy eating in a community where in many instances, people go to the cheapest place quickly, those stores in the community that are usually owned by somebody else, but people buy a lot of potato chips and buy a lot of Hostess Twinkies and some other stuff.
Red Hots
as part of a diet. So, I mean, how do you say to people? What do you say to people to say, look, there's some stuff that can be just as tasty and being healthy at the same time as opposed to doing that or at least reducing some of what you do with that. Maybe try some of this. I know you're going to continue to do some of that. How do you get that message out?
Well, when you're in an environment, we call a healthy food hub our church. It's an environment that inspires people to take care of themselves. So usually when you're outside of a culture that don't support you in eating well, you come to the healthy food hub and everybody is in a conversation, I want to feel better. So when you're in the space of other people that are enrolled in feeling better and being healthy is an important value, it's a lot easier to get them to change their behavior.
Well, as we wrap it up, if somebody wants to get in touch and be involved, what do they do quickly?
Well, we have a website at thehealthyfoodhub.org. You can join and be a member. And then you can still come without being a member. And you can also contact us through Black Oak Center @gmail.com, and also you can call us at 773-410-3446.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming in today. It's been a pleasure to meet the family.
It's been an honor. Thank you.
It's been a restaurant.
You always get the family. That's a good thing, right? Yeah. Dr. Jafunza Wright and Fred Carter, her husband, Kane Carter, the son, and we've been talking about the healthy food hub here at the Barbershop.
You've been listening to The Barbershop Show, bringing you shop talk from Carter's Barbershop, located at 3622 West Cermak in Chicago's North Lawndale neighborhood. If you have any comments on today's show, please give us a call at 888-635-1112 and press 2 to leave a message. We want to thank our guests, Sam Chatman, Fred Carter, Dr. Jafunza Wright, Akeem Carter. The Barbershop Show is brought to you by Vocalo 91.1 FM, sister station to WBEZ. Our show today was produced by executive producer Ayanna Contreras. Our managing director is Sylvia Rivera. The Barbershop Show has a podcast, and you can find it in the WBEZ iTunes store and download it for free. For everyone at Carter's Barbershop, I'm Richard Steele. Thanks for listening.